Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is sports handicapper Frank B., who's one of the gambling experts who post on the gamblingwithanedge.com page. Also sitting in is Anthony Curtis, publisher of Huntington Press and the Las Vegas Advisor. Frank and Anthony, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, guys.
Hello, Bob. Hello, Richard.
The following announcement could go in the commercial section because it's by videopoker.com, but it's important enough to mention up front. Global Gaming Expo, G2E, is the biggest gambling trade show in the world, and it happens in the fall every year. This year, September 27th through 29th here in Las Vegas. It normally costs a couple hundred dollars to attend the exhibits. However, videopoker.com is offering a free pass to all of its members. Simply go to videopoker.com, join for free if you're not already a member, and go to the inbox and you'll see how to do it. I go to G2E every year and find it useful. All right, Frank. In 2016, touchbacks will result in the ball being placed on the 25-yard line rather than the 20-yard line as it has been before. Presumably, this was done to encourage more receiving teams to take a knee in the end zone, thereby reducing collisions and enhancing player safety. The counter-argument to this is now the teams have an incentive to try to kick the ball at about the one-yard line rather than into the end zone because they believe they can stop the receiving team from getting to the 25. Hence, more collisions, less player safety. What is your opinion as to how this will work out?
Well, it's pretty obvious that the NFL wants to eliminate the kickoff entirely. And I'm pretty sure if it weren't for the onside kick, because that's something they want to remain as part of the game, they'd have done away with the kickoff already. The average starting field position in 2015 was somewhere right around the 22-yard line. So this new rule is, if you bang it out of the end zone, is cost the kicking team 3 yards. And that 3 yards equates to, somebody goes, oh, what's the big deal, 3 yards? Teams that start a drive on the 20-yard line score a touchdown 17.9% of the time. Teams that start on the 25 score a touchdown 20.8%. So, I mean, that's actually an increase of 14% more likely to get a touchdown from that starting field position. So it's not an insignificant thing. And so, of course, the special team coaches, they think that they can do something about this. So they're what they call the mortar kick, is where you kick it, you just try to increase the hang time and shorten the distance and get the ball to drop around the goal line. During the preseason, the game lines for the totals were up, and this was what was thought to be the cause of it. They said, well, this is just going to result in more points scored because they're going to kick the ball short, going to get better, get some returns and get better starting field position. But I think what was going on, teams were experimenting. In 2015, 41% of kickoffs were returned. Okay, there was a return on them. In the preseason, it was over 60%. Now, is that going to hold true once the season starts? I don't know. I mean, it's probably personnel specific to these teams. I mean, Robbie Gould is the kicker for the Bears.
Well, he was.
He got cut, and part of the reason he got cut is he couldn't make that kick. You know, they wanted him to kick it and drop it inside the five. He could, for whatever reason, he was having a real hard time doing it, and that's part of the reason that they let him go.
Do you think the totals prices are going to? Do you think they overdid it on the totals prices, or were overcompensating, or not?
Well, they were allowing for it. You could see that during the preseason. You know, it's not often that you get a total in weeks 1, 2, and 4 that exceeds 37. They almost all started above 37, and in week 3, which is considered the dry run, there was not a total below 41. and they went, it went as high as 47. I mean, so totals were way up. Scoring had been up the couple weeks, so that, you know, that's part of it. But I, you know, it's uncertain what's going to happen with this once the season starts. So as far as from a betting perspective, you know, I'm apprehensive to bet any unders right now, because if let's just say on Sunday, there's one game I have my eye on, which is the Miami-Seattle game. There's I took a little 44.5, and right away I said, I don't know if I should have done that, even though that was the only one out there. And that's because if the early games, you start to see an effect from this new rule, you know, they're kicking short, they're getting returns, maybe like somebody returns for a touchdown or even a couple on the early games, and the totals start to go over, you're going to see the bettors start going, okay, this matters, and they're going to start betting everything over. So taking a position now in an under, you know, you're kind of rolling the dice that this doesn't, you know, have an effect, especially, you know, tonight and the early game Sunday. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck holding a ticket that's going to have bad line value.
Okay. There's a change in the way that player injuries are being reported. Previously, there was a probable category, which basically meant he was almost always going to play. But now you don't have that probable designation anymore. From a handicapping point of view, does this matter?
Yeah, I have a lot less to say on this one. This doesn't matter. This hardly matters at all. Probable, like you said, that pretty much meant he was playing. And now, what's the next classification? Doubtful, right?
Questionable.
Then doubtful. Yeah, okay. So questionable was the only one that really mattered. Probable was a guy getting upgraded. Hey, maybe he missed practice on Wednesday. He looks okay. We'll put him down as probable. I don't think this has any effect at all in betting or DFS or any of that stuff.
Okay. Another new rule this year in the NFL is if a player receives two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in a game, he's kicked out. Presumably, if a player gets one such penalty, the other team will find a way to tease him and taunt him without the referees catching them taunting him, hoping he gets so ticked off that he commits another penalty. Teams with hotheads, I'm thinking Josh Norman and Odell Beckham Jr. in the NFL East, last year they were like oil and water in week 15. Now they're in the same division and see each other twice a year. Surely it has to hurt these teams more than other teams. Yes? Does it affect handicapping? Am I way off?
Yeah, I don't think there's much of an effect there. I mean, how many guys get tossed for that a year for catching two unsportsmanlike penalties?
Usually, we've never had that rule before.
Well, I mean, you usually do something egregious, you get thrown out. I mean, is this actually an extension where you get a second chance? I don't know. I don't think this has any effect. It's sort of like a warning, you know. We're not going to tolerate, you know, nonviolent unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. You know, you're not just going to keep there and keep baiting a guy the way Norman did to Beckham in that game. I think after the fact, they, you know, refs and the coach, they were like, either one or both of these guys probably should have been thrown out just to keep the, you know, some sanity to the game, because it really did get out of hand. But I think it's more of this, you know, a thing where they're just saying, you know, we're not going to let it get to this point anymore.
What constitutes unsportsmanlike? I mean, if you kick the ball when you're not supposed to, you kick it down, you know, you're mad, you do some stupid, you know, celebration. What's unsportsmanlike? Is that defined?
Well, I think what they're talking about here is, you know, what happened in that game where they just wouldn't stop jawing at each other. You know,
So basically, all they're saying is they're not going to put up with it anymore.
Yeah. And slapping each other and stuff after the whistle.
And Bob's saying, is that going to make a big difference? Where you can look at a team and say, okay, they can lose their best guy, blah blah blah. Well, I think these guys are going to. I mean, they got to be somewhat professional, right? They're going to calm down, and they're not going to risk being thrown out of a game. I think it's going to be pretty rare you see that actually happen.
All right. Forgive me, Lord, but I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. Last year looked pretty good before Tony Romo went down, and then the season collapsed when he did. This year he's going to miss a bunch of time, and they have a guy named Doc Prescott and backup with Mark Sanchez. How much is that going to affect the line? What does that affect the over-under totals?
Well, it already, if, you know, as soon as Romo went down, you know, they took the game down. They figured, you know, Prescott's in, and they put the game back up. It moved. It cost about 3 points, and not an insignificant 3 points because, like, I had bet the Giants earlier in the summer at +4. So that was the line for a while. It kind of bled down to 3.5, and then this happened. And when they took the game down, reposted it at, I think it posted it at 1. Isn't that what it is? And it's, since then, it's bled down even more. It's pick, and, you know, it's teetering back and forth. The Giants are, I think, 1-point favorite at a few spots. So, I mean, sure, and the total dropped, I think, 3 points as well. So, I mean, sure, it was expectedly, it affected both. And, you know, so we'll see where it goes on Sunday. I'm expecting it's not going to hit 3 the other way. It's going to be bopping around in there between, you know, pick and 2.
Plus and minus 1 or 2.
Yeah.
The daily fantasy, the prices for week 1 were set a long time ago, even before Romo went down. So Prescott is real cheap. That makes him a relative bargain, but also an easy to spot bargain that others will jump on to. Would you advise taking Prescott week 1?
Well, you know, I'm not certain how the DFS thing works. But if the prices were posted before this, you know, they were posted as if he's a backup quarterback, then, well, there's two things. One is that, sure, he's undervalued, and he'll probably outperform his salary. But the other is that, you know, your opponents are all going to see this, and they're all pretty much all going to say, well, this is the best value quarterback, and you're going to have what I think you try to avoid in DFS is being, you know, piling on the most popular players. I don't think that's the way to win, you know, the big tournaments. You know, you got to kind of go against the grain. So, I mean, if it were me, I would avoid them. Now, is the same true of Trevor Siemian and Carson Wentz? Because these guys, if Prescott was aligned as a backup, certainly these guys were too. So it's not like Prescott's the only one in there that's in that situation. Do you know? Is Trevor Siemian and Carson Wentz boat as Dak Prescott? They were just announced as starters recently after these lines were posted.
Correct. Whereas Trevor Siemian is a veteran. Well, he hasn't thrown a pass yet, but he was in the league for a year. And the other two are rookies. So,
yeah, so guys, the same applies to all of them.
What are you guys talking about? Where are you going to play DFS? I mean, you're talking about the new DFS in Nevada, or are you talking about the DFS outside of Nevada? You know how it is now. You know, you can't play the DraftKings and FanDuel if you're in Nevada. I know that people are listening all over the country here. But in Nevada, there is going to be a casino version of Daily Fantasy Sports put out by American Wagering, I think it is, which is the Vic Salerno company.
Yeah. Now, isn't he also, Vic Salerno has a parimutual?
That's what it's going to be. It's going to be a parimutual base. And they're going to try to emulate fantasy sports. The big difference is going to be that you can't play it online. I mean, the big difference is going to be that it's going to be a parimutual. You know, I mean, so it's going to be constructed differently. But the main thing that the customer will understand is it probably won't be quite as slick because they won't be online with all the bells and whistles that they have at DraftKings and FanDuel and Fantasy Draft, another one that's going to be out there this year.
So you'll have to go into the casino and fill out a card, basically.
As of right now, yeah, at least as of right now.
And when is that supposed to start?
It's supposed to be online up and going by the beginning of football. So it's supposed to be happening now. And I mean, I haven't looked, and that's something we should check out.
Yeah, like we were talking about before we went on the air about the Klondike. I got on my postcard from the Klondike in the mail. It said the sports book. It didn't say it was there. It says coming soon, and it specifically mentioned the DFS thing available there. So it's
they were set to be up and running by in something that would equate with a field trial by the beginning of football season, actually. I've got it right here. Where is it? By September, 13 different places as of September 6th. So we're past that. So supposedly, and they didn't list which casinos, but 13 different casinos. And then by September 22nd, in a couple of weeks, 50 casinos throughout, an additional 50 casinos throughout the state. So that's what their plan is in there.
I mean, that sounds like there's only one. They have to be getting plugged in through William Hill. Nobody else is going to set up.
What they do. Sure.
They're the only ones set up for that number of sports books.
Well, yeah. Well, William Hill bought
without having all new soft counter equipment and everything, you know.
But American Wagering with Salerno is close with William Hill because William Hill bought out his Leroy's franchise. So of course that makes sense. That's what it's going to be. Almost certainly is a William Hill offering. So I think, I don't know, it might be very cool. It might be something that that people can do that they're familiar with a little bit. So you can play fantasy to some degree in Nevada, but they won't be able to do it online yet.
It'll be interesting to see how much money they get in those pools.
It really will. I mean, that's the big thing is like the liquidity, you know, just with everything else, and we'll see. But I don't know. There's Salerno's a smart guy. He's been successful in a lot of different ways.
I want to ask this next one to both of you. The Las Vegas Raiders, locally here in Vegas, the town is eager for this to happen. NFL, not so sure. What number would you put on whether we're going to have the Las Vegas Raiders by 2019 or before, Frank?
Well, you know, I don't really know that I could put a number on it. The only thing, you know, betting-wise, as far as the Raiders go, you know, the Raiders have a really bad travel schedule this year. And in addition to that, these guys are probably having to deal with the possibility of having to uproot everything and move. And this could be a distraction for them throughout the season. You know, they're saying, man, I'm not going to be here next year. I gotta get a house. And so the Raiders, as a team, people were pretty bullish on them going in. You know, the season wins get bet up. But I'm not so sure. This is the greatest development for the team as far as performance for 2016 goes. So I'm looking for spots to go against the Raiders. As far as making a line on them coming to Vegas, I have no idea.
The way to dodge that question.
Yeah.
Man. Right. Jeez. Man, you should be in the political debates.
I thought it was a rather nice dodge.
The artful dodger.
Yeah.
All right, I'll answer it. I make it a big dog by 2019. Now, I make Raiders in Vegas, any football team in Vegas, a big favorite. Raiders in Vegas, a decent favorite, but not by 2019. Look how long it really took to get hockey going, and hockey's nowhere near the same kind of thing. And once they made it happen, they had to build the arena, and then once they made it happen, they're still going to delay another year before it happens. You know, they were ready to go this year, and they're delaying again another year. So I'm thinking you're going to see it, but I'd make it an underdog. I'd make it at least, you know, like plus 160 negative, you know, for 2019.
But if we made it 2022, you would make it a favorite.
Yeah. I would. As of 20, I'd make it better than pick 'em as of 2020, I think.
Okay.
And you know what? And let's just say this. This is just based on what I read in the papers. I don't have any inside information on this at all. I just know how I've watched these things unfold in other areas. And there's the big problem is there's still a long way from figuring out how they get a stadium here and exactly where they put it. You know, you hear one thing, and then the next week it's completely different. And there's going to be a lot of maneuvers there. And before that happens, there's going to be no movement.
Colin Kaepernick, backup quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, made headlines for refusing to stand for the national anthem, protesting racial inequality. Public reactions to his actions, at least initially, overwhelmingly negative, although there have been some supporters, and now he's getting smarter about how he gets his message across. And apparently has the best-selling football jersey now. Without debating the appropriateness of Kaepernick's actions, will there be more square money against the 49ers as people are objecting to this backup quarterback, or is this going to have no effect? Frank?
Yeah, I think it has little to no effect. And you know what's happening is you're seeing other players on other teams are starting to do it, so which makes it, I'm going to say, more acceptable. But you know, when a player from your team,
old news.
Yeah, when a player from your team's now doing it, you know, maybe you're pointing the finger at Kaepernick and saying, "Oh, well, you know, well, you anti-American, get a haircut, all that. You know, now it's like, well, you know, well, our all-pro safety is doing. Like, there's a couple guys on Seattle is going to. They say they're going to do it this week.
Well, no, that female soccer player. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So
it's, you know, it's catching track. You know. I mean, you know, way back in the, you know, in the with the war thing, you know, at first the Dixie Chicks were, you know, they were really, people really got on their case, and after a while, you know, everything flipped. So who knows how it works out? But I don't think people are going to bet against a team based on that.
That sounds reasonable to me.
Okay.
Yeah, when it comes to money, the rest of that goes out the window, right?
I think once the season starts, I mean, everybody just waiting for football, you know? And once the season starts, I mean, what a great move he made, whether he believes all that or not, man. His jersey's number one. I
don't know if yeah, it went
got,
from 20.
He's got a piece of it. I don't know if he does.
But it wasn't like he was close. He was 20th, and now he's number one for San Francisco Pro Shop.
20th on San Francisco,
yes.
Right?
Oh, I think even nationally, he's number one.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't 20th, you know, with everybody involved. He might have gone from 20th on his own team to number one. So whether he's a patriot or a traitor, he's a genius businessman. How about that?
Well, I don't know. He's committed to giving all that money away. So I don't know that.
Yeah, but being that makes him relevant, though. I mean, being number one jersey makes you relevant in a lot
of
ways.
Well, and being in the news every day makes you relevant. Right. Yeah.
I'm guessing he's doing this as a true believer and not
I think he Forrest Gumped it right into it. I don't think he had that was the intention.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I can still admire it.
The three games are going to be started by rookies this week. Calling Trevor Siemian a rookie, although officially he's not, but Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz and rookie at quarterback. How do you handicap rookies at quarterback in general?
Well, unless you got something that really, in the player, that really is like 180 degrees from the last guy that was there, you sort of handicap the team and the way they play. So as far as Denver goes, like, there are props up on Trevor Siemian and how he's going to perform tonight. I think you just got to make a line for how well, how often you think they're going to pass, and how efficient this guy is going to be. And I do that for the TV game, so I made this guy 18, and Westgate hung 19.5. So I have Siemian under 19.5 completions tonight, and there's all the associated yardage and touchdown props. But I think that's how you handle it. You look at the team and say what makes sense for this team. I mean, Carson Wentz isn't going to come in there and throw 43 passes tonight on Sunday. You know, they're going to run the ball, and they're, you know. None of these teams, with the guys we're talking about, Siemian, Wentz, and, well, you know, even Dak Prescott. Even Dak Prescott, because, you know, the Cowboys, the strength of their team is the offensive line. And they have two really good running backs, one who they spent a high draft choice on and who people think is going to get maybe 2,000 combined yards. They're not going to go to Dak and say, hey, listen, this is on you. You're going to have to win this. They're going to have a big offensive line. They're going to run the ball until the game situation dictates that they shouldn't do that anymore. So all these guys, I think you just look at the team and say, well, how many times are they going to throw the ball? You fudge down his completion percentage, I think, on every single one of them, and you come up with a number, you know.
Well, if you want to go, is he a lot different than the last guy? I can see very little in common between Trevor Siemian and Peyton Manning.
Not down the stretch, though, last year. Not down the stretch. I mean, certainly you're talking about what he attempted to do in early 2015 and what he did prior to that, you know, chucking the ball around. But I think he was a game manager down the stretch. When he came back from that injury, he went from more high-risk passes. He didn't turn the ball over once he came back from injury. He was playing. He was managing the game, and I think that's what they want out of Siemian. You know, they're going to give the ball to C.J. Anderson. He's not going to be out there slinging it. He's going to look very similar as far as pass attempts to what Peyton did down the stretch.
Okay. Tom Brady. This Sunday night's games features Patriots-Cardinals. As of Thursday, 3 days before the game, the Cards are 6-point favorite. Carson Palmer, quarterback for the Cardinals, came out and said something like, if somebody's caught cheating, he should expect to pay the price. Now, the Patriots largely might not think Brady did anything wrong, but is just being railroaded by Roger Goodell. Now, assuming this is a bulletin board statement, do bulletin board statements affect your handicapping?
I guess sometimes you look at it and say, yeah, hey, maybe you shouldn't have said that. But in this case, the guy that he's talking about is not playing in the game. It would have been a different story if he'd have said, oh, yeah, Brady, man, he deserved that huge fine. And, you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar. That's what happens. But he's not playing. You know, you don't have to face. It's like picking a fight with a guy who you don't have to fight. So I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, the way Belichick runs his team, he doesn't rely on stuff like that. He's gonna.
Also, it's not even that incendiary a statement, right? It's it's not a.
Yeah. Plus he's not the first one to say something like that either.
Well, you notice in this talk, Frank's doing all the talking because Frank's a handicapper. I mean, he does more handicapping work than I do. I don't do any at all. I don't. You know, I play good numbers that I can find in tournaments and things like that when it comes to football. But I did play a lot of sports myself growing up, and I know a lot of athletes who went to the pros and all. And Frank and I, have a big difference of opinion on this about bulletin board stuff. I think the older you get and the more you get into the professional ranks, the less it matters in terms of the chip on your shoulder and the get back and the revenge and that sort of thing. Frank gives it a lot more value. I have very few opinions on handicapping, but just based on my own experience, I always discount that if I'm thinking about it at all.
Yeah, I don't think we differ that much on this specific, like, one player saying, but where we do differ is I like some of these situations, the good story situations, the revenge things, and he doesn't care for them nearly as much as I do. But this, on this particular one, I sort of agree with him that I don't think this is much of anything.
All right, football handicapping contest.
Yeah, I get to talk. All right,
there you go.
Before we hear from Anthony on football, Anthony,
I'm sorry, it's time to go.
Commercials first. Now, there's players who won more than once. Clearly, this demonstrates some combination of being good and being lucky. Let's say a guy has won a big contest twice, and I wanted to use his expertise to make my picks. Assuming I put up all the entry fee, what percentage of the win, if any, would be fair to give this expert?
Okay, so I understand where this is coming from now. There's guys are making deals out there with people who have won previous contests, and they remind me a whole lot of. Maybe it's just me, but I think it's crazy. Like somebody wins some long shot poker tournament, and the next thing you know, he's over there soliciting others. Hey, if you pay the entry fee, I'll play it. And we'll split the winnings, and he thinks it's like a great deal. The guy's making the offer, and I'm actually at the World Series of Poker one year, listening to these guys make these offers. I'm like, who is insane enough to lay 2-1, on their entry fee? But it's what's happening in the sports contest too. You got guys that are saying, I'll pay the. I don't know if it was via an offer from the contest winner or that, but guys are laying 2-1. I'll pay the entry fee. You do the picking, we'll split the money. I think it's insane.
I also think the market has gotten a lot more sophisticated about how to win these tournaments, right? 10 years ago, it's like the early days of blackjack tournaments. People didn't know how to play,
right?
So the really sharp guys like Anthony would win these tournaments because they understood tournament play. Well, the market's gotten a lot more sophisticated, and it's not as easy to win them as it was.
Correct.
10 years ago.
Right.
So, and just like in poker in the World Series, that used to be common, 20, 30 years ago for guys to pay the entry fee and get half. Nowadays, again, people have gotten a lot sharper, and, if they can get a 10% premium or something, or a 20% premium.
One of the biggest values, especially in poker and now in sports handicapping contests and really tournaments of all kind, is what they call in the business back end, and that is after you've won a tournament and made the money, and you get a reputation, and you get a back end, you get back end value, which means that people are going to give you offers like that really don't make that much sense. Or when it comes to poker, they're going to make you a sponsor offer that you wear their patch and all of that. A lot of guys they don't even care about winning the tournament or the prize. It's about what they can get on the back end.
They want to last long, so they stay on camera.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And the more they do, the more back end they get. So, I mean, you're seeing this sort of thing, and, yeah, it gets out of whack for sure. And I agree with you, Richard, that that the players are getting better. Now, handicapping tournaments are a little bit different because handicappers really consider handicapping to be where it's at, and that's everything. And it's very, very important when you play a contest, but there is contest strategy for sure. And, you know, you play differently when you're ahead and you play differently when you're behind. And some of these guys don't really think about that. You get a big giant tournament like, I'm just talking about handicapping in general now in contests, you get something like the Super Contest where you've got how many entrants? 1,800?
Right.
1,700? And you're running up against, even if, you know, there's a lot of contest pros in there, but you're also running against a lot of quants and who are really, really excellent handicappers. And handicapping's worth a lot in these contests. So
and they understand the game theory behind it.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Yeah. But they don't always play contests right. I mean, that's the thing. They do understand the game theory. You would think they would play some of these contests a little better, but we were surprised last year. I mean, Frank and I were in the finals of the Nugget tournament, and we lost. We, you know, Frank picked really crappy on the last thing, and we lost. But
we tied and lost the tiebreaker.
But we had a lot of strategy talks about how we should play certain things, and we kind of guessed that they weren't going to play optimally in terms of contest strategy, and they didn't, right? You know.
Yeah, what it was is there was a point where they pare it down to eight, and we were in the eight, and I was concerned about people chasing us down. So in this contest, there's some stale line strategy there, and my question to Anthony was, you know, do you think it's dangerous to take these stale lines in that it's so transparent that we might do this, that the opposition, the people behind us chasing us, could go opposite and get that swing that's so important? And he kind of waved me off. He goes, I don't think enough of them understand it. And
these weren't quants, right?
Well, apparently not.
Well, we sort of knew some. I knew some of the guys, yeah. So I could actually sort of profile some of them. You know, because there was only like 90 people in the contest, and after a while, you get to know the people who are chasing you.
Yeah, I don't think there was the same level of what you see in the Super Contest, where you get guys that really are, you know, they're right out of hedge funds and, you know, whatever, and they're using their computer models and all, and they might play that a little differently. But it gets really weird. I mean, you know, it's if there's an obvious play based on line move. And I don't want to talk above the audience level here, but I mean, you know, there's a set card and then the line moves. So you can look, you can get a value in terms of where the line has gone and you can get a better number. And if that's a real obvious play, it leaves it wide open for somebody chasing to go, he's going to take it and I'll go the other way. You know, so you have to try to think, are they going to think that way? And that's what makes these things fun, you know.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned big ones, the Golden Nugget, the Superbook. Are these still open?
Okay, so here's the biggest mistake that I've seen prior to kickoff. The Golden Nugget, who, in my opinion, is the best contest that's out there. They changed some of the rules. I thought it was great last year. It's still real good this year. It's 100% payback. It's got the biggest buy-in. They cut off accepting entries on Tuesday night. And if anybody who participates in these contests, like at the Westgate, and they know that people come storming in those last 72 hours to sign up for these things. I mean, I really think they did themselves a disservice by not figuring out a way to accept entries all the way up until the final day. So,
what did they want? They wanted to include to the Thursday night game. Is that right? Is that why they did it?
I think it's just a pro. I think it's an administrative thing where they wanted to be able to get everything set up and put the card out and have the player numbers all. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense unless it was something logistically that they were having.
Did the number of players go down this year?
It didn't go up enough. It closed at 96. Mm-hmm. So 96 people putting in 2,000.
Went up about 10, 12%.
Yeah, about 12%. Cause I think it was 87 last year. And but that's not the kind of growth that we were hoping for, because you want these contests that are good to succeed, to grow every year. That way, not only does the Nugget continue to offer them, but other places, might be motivated to jump in.
And to answer Bob's question, they are open. They are open like right up till the last minutes. All of them except this one. All the other places have said you know, forget about it. We don't count this first game. You know, the Thursday game is out of play. You know, and so what? You know, now they're going to get a rush to the window at the end, but the Nugget didn't, and I think that was a tactical mistake for them in terms of trying to bring more people. Plus, I thought they'd hit about 125 this year. They end up at 97. I think they'd have picked up another 10-15 had they left it open.
Okay, the Nugget's a big contest. What about Anthony? Let's talk to Anthony Curtis. No, what about the smaller entry fee contest? Are there any out there that are worthwhile?
Yeah, there's, you know, every year I love these. You know, I mean, this is how the small guy has fun. This is, you know, the tournament. I mean, the contest we were talking about, our 1500 buy-in at Westgate and 2000 at Golden Nugget, and there's a new one this year for 500, but you can enter three times, so that's another 1500 at William Hill, a college contest. But, you know, the guy who doesn't want to put out that kind of money can play these smaller contests, the $25 entry fee, last man standing things at the station casinos. And there's about five or six prominent free tournaments this year. The two big ones every year are, my favorite is Pick the Pros at the Boyd's. I mean, thousands upon thousands of people play this. So you've got to go clean. You know, you've got to have a perfect card to win it almost every week. But if you do, you can win $30,000. And I mean, anybody. The thing is, you can roll out of bed and fall down on a card and get it right. You know, your wife, who's never bet on a football game in the world, could, you know, pick her favorite teams and get it right. And it's free and it's easy.
But I don't like her chances. It could happen, but I don't like her chances.
I don't hate their chances, to be honest with you. I mean,
their chances are about the same as anybody else.
To go clean is such a long shot, no matter who you are. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the strategy on this is to pick one real strong favorite and go against them. So you try to separate from the pack.
Right? Yeah, and when smart guys go clean, they usually tie with a dozen others. When your wife goes clean, she's probably got some bizarre picks on there, and if she hits it, she's going to scoop. I'm not so sure that she does.
What does that mean, go clean?
Win every game.
Perfect record.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these contests are not... they're not against the spread. They're against. They're just pick. And so it's a different game than against the spread.
In these contests, the worse the team, the worse the matchup, the more value that team has, because everybody is like whatever the big number is. Seattle this week. Seattle, Miami. You put Miami on your card and you hit, you've wiped out everybody. Everybody's gone. It's just like sort of the same thing as in a Survivor contest. So
in contests and tournaments are games of creating variance. So you create variance by doing this. It's a really good strategy to. I'm not saying pick every underdog. You know, that ain't going to get you there either. But because there's no point spread involved, you're right. But you want to pick one or two major upsets usually to try to get that. Did you want to finish?
And people underestimate. Or they overestimate how easy it is to pick a winner. You know, the winners of these no point spread contests, what do you think the winning percentage is? No points, and at the end of the year, the guy's got a winning percentage. What do you think it is?
You mean what percentage do they pick correctly?
Yeah.
80%.
Oh, no, I'm guessing 57, 58.
No, it's around 70, 71, 72%. For just about every contest that I've ever seen. If you can crack 70%, you are in it. You know, it's not like, you know, people think, you know.
What percentage of the time does a team win that's a 14-point dog?
Well, the money line would say they win about like 1 in 10 times.
You know, 1 in 10.
Yeah, something like that, you know. I don't know the exact number. But, you know, the point is, in these contests, the bigger the dog, the more actual value it has, because people just won't, you know. People can look at a game and say, "This team's better than that team. This team's clearly better than that team," and they just won't. They just won't pick them, you know. So you get a lot of value taking something that's better than 7-point dog.
So here's. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just gonna say. So here's the thing. You know, I mean, that's. I said Pick the Pros is a big. You know, it's a long shot contest and it's fun. Here's what's cool about it. There's entertainment value like crazy. Like if you go clean, as we say, cleaner. We have a perfect card in the morning games. You still got what, four or five or six to go in the Monday night game, but it starts, the juices start flowing, and it's really cool, and you're watching. Now, people who want to get something back for sure, the free contest to play is Gridiron Glory. That's the one at the station casinos. And that one, you just, if you play it 3 or 4 weeks in a row, you're going to get something. Every time you score, quote, a touchdown, you make enough wins, which I think is I think it's something like 37 or 38. We worked it out last year. It's something like that. So it takes about 4 or 5 weeks to win it, 3 to 5 weeks. You're going to get something. And it could be a really good prize. They call them instant prizes. The dominant prize last year was $1.50 in slot club points. But $1.50 for nothing is still $1.50. And that's not the average prize. You know, some of them are really good comps meals and things like that. So that's another good one. A third one that I think is very interesting this year is the Rampart. They're not giving away a lot of money every week, but they're going to have a progressive jackpot for a perfect card. It's going to start at 1,000, and it'll roll over to 2 and 3 and all the way up until somebody hits it. Now, the thing about this is here you don't have to pick as many. You know, you can play closer to the favorites here because it's going to be a much smaller field playing here. So I think when it gets up to 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, it's going to be an interesting one to look at if you live up in that side of the valley.
On the Boyd games, there are consortiums of people who have one guy picking for 200 different people's entries, and you're coordinating so that all the entries for all 200 of you are different, and they're picked. If you're not in that consortium, doesn't that give them a pretty big advantage?
I don't know. I mean, it's such a huge field. I really don't. I mean, it's a minor gain to not have any of your picks duplicate. You know, looking at it another way, man, it sounds like a hell of a lot of work to sit down there, fill out all those cards, and make sure they're all different.
Yeah, it sounds like you're worried about like buying a lottery ticket, and you know you might have the same numbers as somebody else.
Yeah, there's a lot of combinations there. I mean, you got to remember that you're not paying anything. All right, now when we were playing tournaments, me and the group that I played with, 20 years ago, I guess it was now. We ran into things like that with big groups coming in and playing. But these were buy-in and pay tournaments. And guess what? We didn't care. We were like, that's more money into it. We're still going to play better than them. And we didn't care. Now, in this one, okay, so they're going to have a bunch of combinations. They're going to take out a bunch of cards. You know, that's why you pick some strange things that they might not pick at all. And you're playing for free, so it's a free roll. I want to add also, and, you know, it's always my job when I come on this show to promote our blog of the same name, gamblingwithanedge.com. And everything we're talking about, there's probably another close to a dozen tournaments running around town, free contests at different bars and things like that. They're all up on Gambling with an Edge. So anybody who wants to look at it and say, where can I play this week? I'm coming into town for a week, and where are the tournaments that can be played by a person on a one-week basis? Because, you know, the pay contests, if you can't play them all year long, you shouldn't play them because you're just throwing your money away because they're season prizes. So all of the weeklies that somebody can play, it's almost like doing a coupon run. You can run around and play in the kiosks all over town and have a lot of action without spending a dime on Sunday. And we've got an actual column there that says, okay to play weekly, yes or no. So it's kind of cool.
And where do they find this? On Gambling with an Edge?
On gamblingwithanedge.com, you've got to go to, you know, go to that URL, and then there'll be a bunch of things across the nav bar that says, you know, read this guy. Frank's got, you know, his blog up there. Bob, you have yours. Richard, I'm still waiting for you. But the radio show is put up there, and Richard puts that information up about who's on. But you just go across the nav bar, and on the nav, there's a thing that says Football 2016. Hit that and look at the drop down, and you'll see the different things that we're putting up through the season.
Cool. There's a company called Sports Radar that's in the business of detecting cheating at sports betting. It will be part of the package when the NHL hockey comes to Las Vegas. It's also being used by the NFL and NBA. Do we know anything about this?
The only thing that I've heard about it that seems like it would have an impact, because, I mean, a lot of the sports books themselves can self-manage this. They know what unnatural action looks like. But I think what this Sports Radar thing does is they bring people in and they actually talk to the teams and the players, and they tell them, we're watching. This would not be as easy to pull off as you think. You know, we have this, and it's sort of like just a little scare tactic. To anybody who may not, who may be thinking something cute, saying, "Well, don't think about it because we're watching." I think that's what the primary service that they offer the leagues.
I did just post on the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page today an article about they're investigating a U.S. Open match. So
I think it's a pure PR move. I mean, you know, what they're doing is they're opening it up. You know, everybody's looking to, by everybody I mean the gambling groups, the leagues, everybody wants to find a way to make it palatable to make sports betting legal across the nation. And, you know, the leagues are coming out cautiously more and more in favor of, like, I guess it's okay, and now we're moving to Vegas, and, you know, so on and so forth. And they've always been guarded, just as Frank said, on what they call unnatural money, meaning that the sports books watch closely, and they pick off these things that are rigged because the money's coming in too strangely. And they notify the leagues. So the leagues have always had this protection. But that's not, I said earlier, a palatable way. That doesn't really cover those bases. And they're looking at this new company as, look at us, we're the White Knights, and here's what we're going to do for you. And it's kind of funny because the casinos have been doing it for them for a long time. But this is going to make everything look better.
And I just think it's a group of people who have found a way to make money.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like facial recognition software, right? It doesn't really work, but they can sell it to a casino and make a lot of money, and
don't
the casino can
thought of it?
Think
I
they
know.
Sleep better at night. Yeah, yeah.
We can talk about facial recognition software. I'm convinced it does work.
And, you got a big head and a big face, so it's easy.
Well, just mama made me beautiful. What can
well,
I say?
Hey, just while we're on that subject, I'd just like to say for any of you surveillance people, let's take a little poll. Any of you surveillance people out there, anybody think it works? I mean, and, you know, just drop us an email and say, yeah, I think it works. And we use it all the time. Just the guys I talk to also all say, no, we never even look at it because it's hopeless.
All right. That trust me, folks, this will be a discussion. That will be a discussion for later. But today we got Frank B. and Anthony talking about sports betting. So that's where we're going to go. MGM has a new app and appears to be taking large bets. Frank, what do you know about this?
Okay, yeah, well, so the MGM app is the 12th sportsbook to put out the application for mobile betting. And it's one of the better ones. It's not reliant on it's not using the software that some of the others use. Like there's one company that provides 7 of the 12, and then there's another that does 3, and then Cantor has their own, MGM has their own. Now this one was designed over in Europe somewhere, so the look of it is different. It sort of looks like the European books when you go over there. It's got a lot of three-way betting on it. It's got a whole lot of live betting and a whole lot of offers on events that normally Vegas books have put up little or nothing on. So from that perspective, it's good, and it's also open in for betting in the real early hours in the morning, because over there they're at the desk over in Europe. So, like, for example, the Boston College and the game that was played in Dublin, Ireland, I put it on at 5:30 in the morning, and the app was open and they had live betting for it and everything, and therefore you could bet on everything else that was in there. So this is the first football season that we'll have a chance to use it, so we don't know exactly how good it's going to be, but it looks really good so far, and they're taking really big limits, and a lot of the big players around town are real happy with it so far, and they have really high expectations.
The station app upgraded.
Downgraded.
I mean, they called it an upgrade. Right. Is it better than it was?
I personally don't like it. They had their own software over there, and I thought it was pretty good. It offered some things that the other apps didn't. And now they're on the most restrictive software, that's the most popular one, where it's difficult to it has real strict fencing, which is how they, you know, the geolocation capabilities of it, so it's difficult for you to bet anywhere near the borders. And just so happens there's a lot of gambling towns around the borders. They plop them right down across the state line.
Like Tahoe or Primm or
Laughlin and Mesquite. You know, a lot of these apps don't work in any of those towns, which is a real problem. And the station one was great. It worked. It worked in those locations. So, they probably got a good deal on it because, you know, it's the most popular provider. And so now they're using that one. But it you know.
Well, here's the thing about the apps. The apps are, if you use them a lot, you're going to be able to look at, you know, he and I have them all. And so I've used them all, and he's used them all. And you're gonna notice the differences. This one's better than that, whatever. But the key is, if you like to play, and you're looking for opportunities, I mean, whether you're playing for entertainment or you're semi-pro or you're a pro or whatever you're doing, you gotta have these things, man. I mean, it's really amazing to be able to see something on the screen or hear something or be able to just compare different lines at the different places and be able to put it in. Now, the only problem is you got to post it up, so you've got to put your money up. Other than that, though, I think the apps are really going to be the future. We're looking into now another thing we're going to put up at Gambling with an Edge is some of the deals you can get by joining. You know, so, you know, right now Station's giving you what? Something like 60 bucks.
50 bucks.
50,000 points, which equates to 50 bucks.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, they give you 50 bucks just to do something that's pretty cool. I said the only negative to it is that you have to post up the money. That's it. You can't keep it in your pocket until it's time to bet. And other than that, you know, go back to, like, the Super Bowl when lines were out the door and people were sitting who had the app. Were betting on the app. They didn't have to get in the lines. There's just a lot of advantages.
I just wish they all had desktop versions of it so you could do it on your computer at home, you know.
Yeah.
With a full keyboard and...
Well, just for that, for the ease, I suppose. But, I mean, you know what? Here's how I do it. He does his on his phone. I do mine on an iPad. An iPad is, you know, bigger, closer to a regular computer, and it works just fine. And that's how I do it.
So. Some bettors like to bet early, which casinos post lines early on?
Well, right now on Sunday, you got a choice of about three or four. Let's see. The very first college lines go up at Wynn at 3 p.m. Now, there's also another place.
3 p.m. on Sunday for the following week's games.
Right, and that's for college football.
Okay.
It gets a big crowd. And there's another place that goes up at 3 p.m. Saturday that gets virtually no one. That's the Stratosphere. You wouldn't suspect them because if you're going to rank the sportsbook operations, then Stratosphere is not going to be way up there. But they put those lines out. They copy them from an offshore book called Bet Online. I notice it on the screen. Bet Online goes up. 10 minutes later, Stratosphere puts them up, and they have low limits. But you don't have a whole lot of competition over there. You know, if you're a guy who bets 500 or less, it's not a bad play to go over there. You're going to get, on average, a better number than you will over at the Wynn because you got all the bigger players over there fighting for those. So that's for college football, 3 p.m. Wynn, 3 p.m. Stratosphere. Also, Cantor goes up pretty early. You can't really pin them down, but it's right around. It's right around. If it's not 3 p.m., it's within the next hour. And for the NFL, Westgate has been putting them up. They claim they're going to put them up at somewhere before 5 o'clock, but Cantor sometimes puts them up before the early games are even over. So, you know, when it comes to the NFL, we're just going to have to wait till this week and see what happens because this is week one. You know, we haven't seen what the people have in mind for this season. But your best bets are, you know, and the thing about Cantor is Cantor's available on the app. So what you get is you get guys sitting over at the Wynn, which prior to last year didn't have an app. They have an app now too, but they'd sit there and then they could do this with the, you know, they could have the app in their hand and compare lines and, you know, start knocking down numbers. But the rest of them pretty much, and MGM will probably put them up Sunday night as well. But that's about it. Those are the ones that go up on Sunday. Everybody else is up on Monday.
Okay. There was an article a little over a month ago that Anthony already spoke about on an earlier show, but Frank, I wanted to get your opinion on it. It was Deadspin article. It was called How Anthony's Favorite Sports Betting Favorite Turned a Sucker's Game into an Industry. It's basically a hatchet job on RJ Bell and his company pregame.com, which is a tout service for betting on sports. Do you, Frank, have any thoughts about the article or tout services in general?
Get them started.
Yeah, really. So as someone who has a pretty strong disdain for touts, I thought it was great. I mean, the question is more like, was it fair? I think in the big picture it's fair because the tout industry, you know, their strategy is to misrepresent their records and manipulate numbers in order to present the, you know, a very unclear picture, and you know, try to entice, you know, people into buying their service. So for them, you know, when the article comes out, you know, the first thing pregame says is, well, you know, you're manipulating these numbers, and you know, this isn't exactly the way what they mean, and the way they, that the numbers are, you're misrepresenting things. I mean, I thought it was a real case of the pot calling the kettle black. They say, you know, we don't like the way you're presenting these numbers because they create a false impression there. So, I thought it was given that, I thought it was fair. You know, just who was on the other side of it.
Very good. This isn't sports betting, but it's interesting thing casino-wise that caught my fancy. So maybe this is more for Anthony. They're building casinos in Vladivostok. Now, if you looked at a map of Russia all by itself and compared it to a map of the United States, Vladivostok would be Miami. The big difference, the maps, is that instead of the Gulf of Mexico in the U.S., it's land over there and called North Korea and China. Now, 2 hours east of Vladivostok, by plane, you have Japan. Now, Vladivostok is more corrupt than other parts of Russia, which is saying something. And its pollution is worse than average in Russia. Saying something there, too. Doesn't sound like the makings of a tourist resort. Still, the largest casino in Russia is already there, and more are being built. Do you see that as an opportunity for American players?
An opportunity? I mean, there used to be opportunities galore in Russia. I mean, you know, I think we all probably knew guys that used to go to Russia.
I went twice.
Yeah, right?
Don't we know a guy that got held up at gunpoint by the casino
yes.
manager and said, give me the money back?
He was on the show talking about that, yeah.
And I mean, you know, there were a lot of... Look, there's opportunities anywhere a casino pops up. A new casino pops up, even in Vegas, and you see a lot of familiar faces, people looking around, kicking tires, right? Same thing all over the world. People go and check out new places they like to go when they open. So that would, you know, there's an opportunity there. But do you really want to screw around with that situation? I don't know. I don't see it as a particular opportunity for Americans per se. I think that they'll do fine with the business because of all the things you just mentioned. People don't, you know, we think about gambling and we think about our neighbors and the people in Detroit and, you know, Cleveland and Omaha and Pocatello and who all come to Vegas or they go to the place near them. Well, those places, you know, the Asian market is gigantic. And they're going to all give it a try if they give them the right incentives to go over there. So I think it's interesting, but I don't think anybody here, or at least players that I know who are very active, are sitting and go, I can't wait till those places open in Russia. Don't go rushing over there, if you get what I mean.
I said this on the show before. I mean, 20 years ago, I would have been on the plane the week it opened. I absolutely would have gone. You know, I think it's a big opportunity. Anytime a big casino that is going to get big action, which I assume this place is, if they're making a ton of money, then it's a good situation to be able to try to take some money out because they don't notice it. You're small compared to the amount of money they make when those places first open.
I think we're talking about two different levels. I mean, if you're talking about the top of the top, if you're talking about the pros, the APs, quote unquote, then yeah, they're all going to go give it a go. They're all going to give it a look and see what they can find there. And what will happen is a bunch will go, and then the word will come through the grapevine and, you know, through people's connections. And if there's something really good there, then yeah, they'll go. I guess I'm thinking in general as a tourist, is that something that people are going to want to flock to?
Oh,
that was my answer. No. I'm like, I don't think anybody, you know, it's going to affect anything on that level.
What tourist wants to go to Siberia, right?
Well, on the pro level, on the expert and pro level of gambling, every single casino in the world or off the world on Mars that opens is going to be inspected, for sure.
And actually, the guy we were talking about, who I'm trying to remember what name he used when he was on the show.
Mike Diamond, maybe?
Or
Diamond Mike.
Close enough.
or it might have been Bradley Peterson. I don't know. But
no.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Mark Dace.
Maybe that was it. I wouldn't be surprised if he's been there already.
So. I would, because I know where he's been.
But, oh, okay. Well.
But I'll tell you what, people of his ilk, yes, they will be there, and they will check it out. Or the people that he associates with will be there, and they'll tell him, all right, it's worth coming to or whatever.
Yeah.
So on that level, yes, absolutely. There will be an opportunity because it's new, potentially. But otherwise, other than that, I just, no. Aside from the countries in that proximity, you know, no.
Although, if I was going, I would almost certainly take an Asian big player with me. I wouldn't want to be the one taking the money off.
Yeah, if it's a hostile environment, I mean, listen, you know, I know some guys would go, if it's that dicey, I'm probably going to, I mean, they could offer 3-1 blackjack in North Korea. I'm not going there either. So, I mean, I guess it's just what you're willing to tolerate, you know. Cause
right, well, but the problem is you don't know if it's dicey until right. somebody goes to check it out.
Right.
Now, in Vegas, in a couple months, they're opening a small Chinese casino, Lucky Dragon. I certainly am going to be there opening night checking out video poker. I am not expecting much, but I will be there.
I'm going to go to eat. I'm going to check out the food.
It's hard for me to pass for Chinese. I'm a bit tall, among other things. So, but I will definitely be there to check it out. All right. Before we let Frank go, what playoff teams from a year ago do you not think making the playoffs this year?
Playoff teams from a year ago. That means I would have to remember who they were. Let's see. Well,
I would guess he could name.
I could get probably 10 of the. There's 12 of them, right? So 10 of the. So okay. So Washington won their division. I guess you could say
that division's got to be a pick 'em.
That's a toss up there. So you could say, Washington is probably. I like the New York Giants in that division. So say Washington might have a tough time repeating. And in the weak AFC division that has the Colts, the Texans, the Titans, and the Jaguars.
Jaguars aren't going.
I guess it was the Texans last year. So I could, and the Colts didn't make it. So that division is sort of the one where you want to take a pot shot on a plus money team to make it. You know. Any of those teams, including I don't know, you don't like the Jaguars. I mean, they're a team. They have an arrow up. The coaching situation is strong, and they have a young quarterback, and they got some weapons. Any of them could win 9 games, and that's probably what's going to win that division. You know, Houston and Indy are more likely to win 9 games, but the numbers on Tennessee and Jaguars are 7, 7.5. They could win 9 games, so I would say that division right there. You could see Houston not making it, and because Brock Osweiler, a quarterback, we don't know what you're going to get there. Fantastic defense in Houston, though. So I would say Houston and Washington would be the two that, if I had to pick two, they're not going to repeat because the rest of them are all real strong: Seattle, Arizona, New England.
Bengals.
The Bengals might be one. Yeah, the Bengals might be one. They lost a lot. You know, they lost a lot on offense over the. So that might be another one. So I'd say that those are three good ones.
Conversely, anyone who didn't make it, who you think has a real good chance to make it? We've already mentioned the Colts.
Yeah, well, so you're replacing those teams then, I guess. So it's probably teams from the same division. Like I said, the Giants. I'm not high on the Colts. So, like I said, that division, the best unit of those four teams is the Houston defensive unit in that division. So you still got to make them the favorite, but I guess the Colts would be the other one, the Giants, and let's say the Baltimore Ravens then, because we were mentioning Cincinnati. If somebody's going to take their place, let's say Baltimore. Baltimore's got a decent shot.
I would say the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Not the Steelers?
That's how much I know about it.
I would think the Steelers had a better shot than the Pirates. All right, good. Let's listen to our sponsor. Listen about our sponsors for a few seconds. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Every Thursday in September, 25 people get to spin the wheel in the $500 Big Spin and Win promotion. If your name is called over the loudspeaker, which may be heard all over the casino, and you're a woman, you have 4 minutes to make your way to the showroom. If you're a man, you only have 240 seconds. The Wheel has prizes of $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, and $25,000 with an average of $4,250. After each week's drawing, you may begin earning tickets for next week's drawing. Each day, there's a maximum of 1,600 tickets you may earn, $1 per ticket for video poker, $1 for four tickets at Reels, midnight to midnight. Starting about a half hour after the drawing on Thursday, you may earn an additional 1,600 tickets before midnight. My best guess is for video poker players, this adds between a quarter and a half percent EV up to $1,600 coin in a day. Last year when the contest finished under the guaranteed amount, so they kept drawing tickets, they kept drawing names five at a time until they exceeded the amount that they promised to give away. It's a really cool feature that you don't typically see at other casinos. Since the day for the promotion is midnight to midnight, if the hours work for you, you can go late night and finish up your 1,600 points just before midnight. And then once the witching hour strikes, start on tomorrow's 1,600 points. Keep in mind the casino day goes from 3 a.m. to 3 a.m. So if you play exactly 1,600 points before midnight, your score will eventually read, it'll read 3,200 points when you finish. If the South Point figures out your mailers partially on average daily play, doing 1,600 points before midnight and then 1,600 after midnight would count as the same casino day, so you would get your play in half as many days, which could affect you mailer-wise. Next week's free video poker class, Wednesday, September 14th at noon, NSU Deuces Wild, a pay schedule that returns 99.73%. The beginner and intermediate classes will be held September 14th, and the advanced NSU will be held the following week, September 21st. The advanced class will define and identify all the various types of penalty card situations in this game. Classes are held in the Silverado Lounge, which is near the northwest corner of the casino. At the Palms, from now until the end of September, drawing Saturday night 7:15, winners share $10,000 a night. Every day, Monday through Friday, you can swipe to receive 20 drawing tickets. PFP, play for prizes. From now until September 16th, you earn Albertsons gift cards. For the last 2 weeks of the month, you earn TJ Maxx gift cards. Prizes are redeemed and earned up to at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep the points. In September, on Sundays, you earn double points video poker, 10 times points on Reels. VideoPoker.com. Best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the game. The game of the week is 10 play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coins per line game where every so often you receive the Dream Card, meaning it's the best possible card given the first four that are there. This makes hands like Royal Flushes, Four Aces, other biggies much more frequent than in regular video poker. And you pay for this with 10 coins per line instead of 5 coins per line. In games where 4 aces is worth a little, like jacks or better, you get a lot of dream cards. In games where 4 aces are worth a ton, like triple-double bonus, not so many dream cards. Dream card feature adds about a tenth of a percent, and you do not have to learn a new strategy to play the game. All right. We have been talking to Frank B. and Anthony Curtis. And while I'm searching for another question to ask him, Richard, why don't you tell us where people can get the show?
First of all, we encourage your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or on the Facebook page, facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can put the comments right on gamblingwithanedge.com on the various shows, and which will bring us there to discuss topics we talk about on the air. You can also tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week by signing up at gamblingwithanedge.com or iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, wherever you like to get the show. There's a that feature is there. You can find an archive of all of the old episodes at bobdancer.com.
All right. I have another question that Anthony and Frank are not expecting because I just made it up. Hopefully. On yesterday's Colin Cowherd radio show, he was talking about how the NFL needs more quarterbacks. There's so many that are injured now or not playing the first week for different reasons. Tony Romo, Tom Brady, Teddy Bridgewater. And a lot of the good ones are getting pretty long in the tooth, whether you're talking about Drew Brees or Eli Manning or Ben Roethlisberger or some of the others. So there's a lot of unknowns at quarterback. And so the game, in Colin's opinion, needs more good quarterbacks quickly. Do you agree?
Well, you know, a pro style quarterback in college, they don't. Some of these programs don't run the type of offense that's going to get a player prepared for the pros. I mean, you got a lot. You can go all the way down to the extreme, like Georgia Techs and Armies and Navies and these teams that run the ball 85-90% of the time. I think that it's just a phase right now, because like you said, there are a bunch of guys who are getting they're getting up there. You just saw the thing over the last week, Drew Brees trying to milk another two or three extra years worth of money out of the Saints that he probably is not going to earn when those years come around.
But give it to him, he got it.
But I'm saying that situation, the situation that you're describing, it makes him possible to make his case. You know, it's like there's who you gonna plug in there next year or the year after that. So I think it's just a temporary thing. These guys come up, they establish themselves, and the NFL is an offensive passing league now. You know, they're gonna start bringing in the right type of guys, the big guys with the big arms, and I don't think it's anything urgent right now. You know, new guys will show up, and a percentage of them will succeed, and things will go on.
Very good. Thank you, Frank B. Thank you, Anthony Curtis. Richard, go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.